Welcome to The International View on TalkZone.com, the show that discusses the positive and negative things affecting our world. Now, here's your host, Fanta Croma.
Welcome, beautiful listeners in Radio Land. You are listening to The International View on TalkZone.com. I am your host, Fanta Croma. My co-host, Berenice Moduba, is not in studio with me today because she has a very urgent matter to attend. I hope and pray that she'll be with us next week. Our topic for today's discussion is Finding My Frequency, which is a book written by our special guest, Mr. Sei Zoni. Mr. Sei Zoni is a speaker, an author, a youthful soul, and an entrepreneur. He was born in Sanikwote City, Nimba County, Liberia, West Africa. He has BSc in Electronics Engineer, and he is currently pursuing his writing and speaking career. He just finished the sequel to his debut book, Finding My Frequency. Welcome, Sei, to The International View. We are very glad to have you on our show today.
Thank you, my sister Fanta. Thank you for having me on. I'm very excited to be here today.
You are most welcome. Okay, Sei, what really motivated you to become a writer?
Well, you know, it goes back to when I was a boy. When I was a lad, I had this urge of writing. I love to see written words. Words would jump off the page and jump at me. Especially, I give you a short story. I was in fourth grade, and the word is dead. S-T-E-A-D. I could not spell that word. And usually in our class, we had a spelling contest. And I came home, I was so saddened that I could not spell instead. And since then, I paid keen attention to words. So my love for words, my love for reading, and ultimately, I wanted to tell my story. Writing is about telling stories. And I so my book is somehow semi-autobiographical and also motivational. So that's where the love came from. It sparked our interest. And since then, I found myself reading and writing.
Okay. That's good. So... I'm looking at you like you are an engineer and now you are a writer. How are you coping with the two and how is it working for you?
Oh, well, that's a powerful question. You see, what Roger Emerson said, there comes a time in every man's education when he realizes that envy is suicide and imitation is ignorance. What do I mean by that? Or what does he mean by that? At some point in time in our life, we have to separate our job from our work. So as an engineer, it's what I do for a living. That's my job. But my work, what defines me, what I am, is a writer, is a speaker, a youthful soul, an entrepreneur. That is my work. So my job enhances my work. So I find time to do my engineering job to get paid to make a living. But when I want to express myself, to define who I am as the person who I am in this world, I am a speaker, an author, a youthful soul, and an entrepreneur. That's who I am. So my job as an engineer facilitates my work as an author and a speaker. So I will find time in my spare time to write and read. And while other people go to play basketball and fishing, and my spare time is spent reading and writing. That's what I enjoy doing.
Okay.
And then ultimately, I want my work to overshadow my job. So I would get to the point where what I do as my work will also support my living expenses. And that is the ultimate goal. That's what we write books, and hopefully we can sell 500,000 copies after this interview.
I pray, sir. I pray. Okay, see. How did you come about with such a great book title, Finding My Frequency?
Well, it's a little bit long story. It goes back to when I was a boy. When I was a boy, I was fascinated with radio. You know, I used to look at my father sit down, and this is in chapter 5 of the book, by the way. I told the story there. And I used to watch my father sit and watch the little shortwave radio. You know, it was a little device sitting on a bench and with enormous sound and people's voices coming. It just intrigued me. How is it possible that a little box that is not connected to anything physical, you know, can give a sound and voices and people talking from distant land, from BBC and Monrovia? How are we getting these voices? So that intrigued me. So so when I got older, I said, well, I'm going to learn how to fix radio. You know, that's what I thought. I would go to town and see those little guys who used to repair radio in the shop. And it would just fascinate me. I said, how is this guy able to fix these things? So in my little mind, I really thought those guys who were repairing radios were geniuses. You know, these guys are smart because they're the ones who, I didn't know the difference between repair and manufacturing. I thought they manufactured radio and they were the ones responsible for the radio working the way it did. But then, anyway, fast forward, I went to BWI. BWI is a vocational institute in Liberia. And when I was in 10th grade in 1988, I took up electronics engineering, only to learn how to fix radio. But anyway, you know, long story short, I understood the principle behind radio, electromagnetic waves and all that. And then, so when I was writing my book, I said, okay, because when you transmit a radio signal from a transmitter before it gets to your radio, it comes in an envelope called the electromagnetic wave, and that wave has to be in proper propagation, meaning it has to travel without distortion. So the frequency has to be clear. So when I was writing my book, I said, you know, I would kind of marry the two. So finding my frequency, I need to find a place in life where I can transmit my best self, who I am as a person. You know, I need to find that. And all of us, if we can find our center, where we are our best, where we are not influenced by any outside chatter or any influence from our parents, from church, from friends, where we can express ourselves without any distortion, that's our center frequency, and that's who we are. So finding my frequency tells a story of how I form myself, how I pause. I think the subtitles say why and how I pause in my upward mobility and embrace austerity. What that means is that how is it that I was living so good, making all this money, and how can I stop in my upward climb and embrace a simple life? You know, because the simple life is where I form my frequency and is where I can transmit my very best self. So that is where the book title came from.
Okay, that was great. And you got such a great book title, but then when and where you decided and or what inspired you, like, okay, this is what I've gotten in my head, I know about this, and I want to write about it. What inspired you to writing this book?
Yeah, so I was working as an engineer for General Electric. I was an MRI engineer for General Electric. Good paying job. Perks are good. Benefits are good. Every 2 years, you know, I changed my car. I never bought gas for almost 5 years. I had a company credit card. Life was just going by smoothly. But, you know, in our life, like I said, there comes a time in every man's life when he must look at his life. And there's something called introspection, where you have to look within yourself. You know, you have to really go in front of the mirror, close the door, and look at yourself in the mirror and say, this what I'm doing? Is this what I'm really called to do? Is this my real self? Is this what makes me come alive? Is this what brings me fulfillment? You know, what it is I want to do that will make me happy, that I can do effortlessly and without any pain. What it is I want to do that will make me happy. And when the answer came back to me, and that's introspection, looking within yourself, when the answer came back to me, you know, I love reading and I love writing. So I was like, well, reading and writing cannot pay my bills. I can't live off of this. You know, I'm now a renowned writer, and no one knows me as a writer. And here I am as an engineer. I'm doing this for a living. How can I stop doing this and go and write? Who's going to buy my book? But the thing is, you know, in life, you can't let fear temper your judgment, and you can't let fear cripple you, because fear will destroy your entire life. So after the introspection, then comes what I call self-flagellation. And what I mean by that is you got to beat yourself up. Self-flagellation means where you have to beat yourself and say, listen, you must do this. I don't care what the word says. I don't care what happens. You have to do this because this will bring you fulfillment. So after 3 years, it took me 3 years of introspection and 3 years of self-flagellation, beating myself up, and I arrived on the 12th of September, 2011. I sat down in my kitchen table and told myself, I said, well, you know, this thing has been on my mind. I can't run from it. I have to do it. I have to find time to write the book.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can't serve two masters. You have to serve one.
I know.
I can't be a full-time engineer, and I can't be a full-time author. So it was a very difficult decision. And when I drafted my resignation letter to GE Healthcare, and I to say I'm sorry that I will pursue my writing career, my speaking career, because I know I have something of substance to give to the world. I have a message, and the message is just my story, that you, yourself there, whoever reads my book or whoever hear me speak, have within them, buried deep within them, the ability to shape their own life, if only they can embrace it without fear. So when I did that, it was easy. I wrote my resignation letter, and when I hit send that morning, I felt an immense relief. I felt as if I have just, you know, flew off a cliff and I was flying. And I sat down, and it was very dangerous. My wife got angry, and people thought I went crazy. And she came by the house and said, man, what are you doing? What's going on? And people thought I needed psychological, you know, counseling because I've done something unthinkable. But, you know,
that's
but,
so
like
funny.
I said, yeah, once you come in connection with your true self, there's no way you can deviate. There's no way you can run from it. You have to go full throttle. You have to embrace it, because you have something to give to the world. So that's where the ambition came from, and that's how I became a writer.
Oh, wow. That's so great. And that was a strong decision you took. Okay, see, we will take a short break, and we will be back with more discussion on our book, Finding My Frequency.
You're listening to The International View on TalkZone.com. Here's Fanta Croma.
Welcome back, our beautiful listeners. Before the break, we were discussing the book Finding My Frequency with our special guest, Say Zone. Say, what is your goal for writing this book?
Well, when I sat down to write, to be very honest with you, it was first and foremost a journal. You know, when you do something very dangerous like I did, you know, something very heartwarming, you have to really come to terms with yourself. So no one understood what was happening within me. And it was very difficult to express to people what was happening, because people thought I had lost it. Some people say it was midlife crisis, early midlife crisis I was going through. So I needed to vent. So it started off just as a journal. I started writing my story, telling myself why I'm doing this, and how is it that I'm not crazy? How is it that I'm not stupid? And I just had to do that. So I started writing, and at first I didn't know how to put it in the form of a book. So I just started telling my story, and I decided to do that. So I wrote the journal for about a month, and I came out to about 10 pages. Then one day it hit me that I have to tell my story in a chronological order, and I have to really get to the word that someone might read my story and to get inspired by it, and to also find their own frequency. And despite all the chatters and all the influences from our world, from our parents, our churches, and our well-wishers, from all the people who affect us in our lives, if we can just put them aside and consider our own thinking, we can do wonders in this world. So it started from there. That was the seed to the authorship. So what I did was I said, well, I will do the journal, and I will see where it goes. So I started writing, and I remember one night, as a matter of fact, the very first part of the book, where I talk about the author's note before I start the chapter. And I will just read that for you so people can understand, because, you know, usually when people say they're authors, they tend to feel that it requires a tremendous amount of education, that you have to be versed in grammar and you have to be, you know, an English major to write, but not necessarily so. And people feel that when you're right, you think you're something special. So listen to what I wrote in the author's note at the beginning of the book. this is the third paragraph. It said, there is one thing I do not want this book to be. That is, to be seen as an accomplishment of something grand that I have done. I say this not out of self-deprecation, but because I'm cognizant of how perception plays a pivotal role in our labeling of one another. I'm of the belief that not many people perceive me to be an author, and I'm afraid that the grandiosity that is falsely ascribed to authorship may dilute the message of change I want to echo on these pages. I came to the conclusion to write not because I wanted fame, but because I sincerely hope my story will entice you to do what masters you. While writing this book, I constantly reminded myself that any idea of pomposity found in my presentation of it will take away from its true intention, to inspire change in you. So that is my message. I didn't write because I wanted notoriety. I didn't write because I wanted fame. I really want the story I told in this book to touch any reader so that they can consider their own life and find their own frequency and enact change in our world. Because people talk about change, change, change. Change is very difficult to take a hand, you know, because at first, like Michael Jackson said, you know, you must start with the man in the mirror. I can't say, well, let's change, and I want you to change, and if I can't change myself. So the only way to change the world is to change ourselves. You know, that's the only way change can come in the world. So when I decided to write, I said, well, you know, because people say, well, this man's an engineer. He's not an author. I can write a book. You know, what is the substance in the book? So I said, well, I have to tell that little story before I told my story. So if you get the book in the author's note, the third paragraph, and that's how I describe it. And so the book is about change. And it's not to tell you to change your life. It's to tell the reader, when he or she reads, to put my book down and do the same introspection I did, and do the same flagellation I did, and then find your frequency, and then give the world your best self.
Okay, that's great. I started reading your book, right? And to tell you the truth, your book relates to my life in so many ways, and it's very educative. I came upon something you said, like when I was reading, I think in chapter one, and it has to do with your experience during the Liberian Civil War, where you had to travel from Calcutta to Bangor. And somewhere you made a very great statement. You said, whatever we desire to own or achieve must first take roots in our heart and never give credence to extender opinions or threats. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes. And simply what I'm trying to say is that, you know, when you come in terms with who you are, because, you know, external threats, people will say this, and people, so whenever you conceive an idea within your heart, and whenever you come to terms with who you are, and you embrace it with all your being, right, and you give it your full attention, right, you must never, ever listen to external influences, because naysayers and people will say, ah, man, that's risky. Don't do that. You know, when you do that, what about this? What about that? I'll tell you a short story. Chapter 7 of the book talk about, the title is That's Irresponsible. I remember when I took the decision to quit and go to Liberia and to write a book, I called my niece. And I was so excited because, you see, when you come in contact with your frequency and you come in contact with who you are, you get so excited and you want to tell the entire world about what you've done and what you've discovered. So I called my niece and I told her, I said, listen, I just quit my job and I'm so excited. I'm about to start writing my book. She's like, what do you mean by that? That's so irresponsible. How can you quit your job? She said, how can you quit your job when you have children and wife and family to take care of? How are you going to take care of children? That's so irresponsible of you quitting and leaving your family and going away. And that hurt me so badly. But it reminded me of something, because people want you in your comfort zone. People, you know, when you change, it's just not you. When you change, you also change people around you, because people who depend on you don't want you to change. So it affects everyone around you. So what I meant by that statement was, you know, when you come in contact with your truth, and when you do that, don't allow external chatter. Don't allow other people's idea, other people's opinion to weigh on you, you know. Just consider your own thought. Embrace your own idea, you know. Fall in love with your own thinking. And embrace it with all your might. Because in the end, whatever happens, come rain, come shine, whether you win or whether you lose, right, it is your decision to bear. And in most cases, if you look in history, all the people who became great, who did wonderful things in our world, right? They had to go through a wounding process. There was a quote I saw once that said, who God blesses mightily, God first wounds greatly. So before you become great, the beautiful earring that you're wearing now, if you're wearing one, it didn't just fall from the sky. What happened was they took that metal, they put it in the furnace, the guy heated, and the guy was beat into shape to bend that earring or that ankle or that chain or whatever you have to bend it into shape. So when you embrace an idea, you know, it's like you're fresh iron and you're out of shape. But the goldsmith has to take you and put you in the furnace and heat you up. So when you embrace change, people know what's coming. They know it's very difficult, and they don't want you going through that. So I believe it was out of love she said that, you know, but you have to remember that people will want you to remain in your comfort zone and not go outside your comfort zone. But that's the only way you can be great. You cannot stay in your borrowed comfort and bring change. You have to fall. You have to surrender. You have to go beyond yourself. So that passage there was talking just about that.
Wow. That was very, very, very great point you gave there. And it's very, very, I don't know. It relates that to my life in so many ways. And okay, our listeners, if you want to be part of this discussion, you can call 888-463-6748. 888-463-6748. Okay, say another place again. I was reading, and then it was somewhere in chapter 2. You talk about your school picnic, and there was an incident with swimming, and it has to do with peer pressure. And you said to fall for peer pressure and plunge in the water, knowing I had no swimming skills, meant big trouble or possibly a fatal outcome. I pick humiliation over death. Why did you come up with that such decision?
Yeah, because you see, I'll tell you the story. I think it was in 1983. That story came, back home, it is customary that at the end of every school year, when I was in school, when I was a boy, I'm not sure that practice is still being carried on. But when I was a boy, at the end of every school year, we had our homeroom teacher. Back home, we called him our class prefect and the class sponsor. So the class would collect, foodstuffs, the rice and pepper, and the entire class would go out in a remote location, to have a picnic. And this time, we went, there was a hydro plant outside the city in San Nicolet, across the train track, for those who know where San Nicolet is. And we went there for a picnic. And the funny thing about it was I knew I couldn't swim. But there was a girl in my class that I adore. And as a young boy, you don't have that boldness to tell a girl that you like her. You always would just tell it to your friends, but you won't go to the girl and tell the girl yourself. So we went to this hydro place, and I was trying to talk to this little girl, but I couldn't muster the courage to do so. And we were standing in the shallow water, and there was a kid in our class who was a good swimmer. And so he went up on the level, up on the ledge, and was jumping from there into the hydro and swimming. And he stole the girl's attention. And some of us were standing in the shallow water watching him do his thing, and wanting to impress the girl. And that's what I'm trying to say in chapter 2, wanting to impress the girl. I said, well, this could be a fatal outcome, if I don't follow my heart and stay here and go plunge in that water, I would kill myself because I knew I never had the ability to swim. I never had that capability. So I would not fool myself to go and jump off the ledge and kill myself. So I had to embrace humiliation over death because if I had gone to jump off the ledge, I would kill myself because I couldn't swim. So I swallowed my pride and I picked humiliation over death. But had I gone to jump from the ledge, I would have died. But the humiliation was so much because people were laughing at us and taunting us that we were not swimmers. And the girl I had a crush on was also there laughing. And that pressure, that peer pressure was there for me to go and prove myself. So you see, in life, when we try to prove ourselves sometimes, if we're not careful, if we don't follow our own script and want to do what other people tell us to do, that can cause humiliation or it can cause death because we'll go the way that we don't know we can go. And we'll go and do things that we know we can do. And that will cause some serious friction And instead of picking humiliation and being quiet and sitting down and allowing the thing to play out, you want to prove something. You want to go show your, you want to show off, you go and kill yourself. Or you may not kill yourself in certain instances, but you may lose larger income and in the plan. So, you know, so you have to pick humiliation over something catastrophic. So that's what I was trying to say in that passage. It's very important for you to pick humiliation over something very detrimental to your health. In business, in life, in whatever endeavor you undertake. So that was my point in that passage. And it tells an old story. And that was a good lesson that I learned and all my life. And I think that's what brought me to the point where I was able to accept my inner thinking, my inner voice of becoming an author, because I had no form of training. I have not written anything before, and I was living certainty for uncertainty, because I was plunging into a new world of authorship where I had to create alliances. I had to write a book. It requires lots of research. It's a work, but like I said from the onset of this interview, it was my work. See, my job as an engineer is there, but this is my work. And until I die, all of us, and my work was my frequency. Until I die, I had to transmit my frequency. I had to write books. I had to speak. I had to motivate. I had to educate. And ultimately, I had to be an entrepreneur. So in the end, I want all these things to define me, and I want my work to be my work. So that's where that passage came from.
Okay. Thank you for making it so explicit to us and making us to understand the meaning of that passage. And we will take a break and we'll be right back with more discussion on our book, Finding My Frequency.
Welcome back to the International View on TalkZone.com. Here again, Fanta Kroma.
Welcome back, beautiful listeners. Before the break, we were discussing the book, Finding My Frequency, with our special guest, Sei Zuni. We will go to the phone line. We have a caller on the line. Joseph, are you there?
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Fanta. Thank you also to your studio guest, Mr. Sei Zuni. I read part of his book. It's a splendid exposition. He did a very good job in the book, and I must commend him for the job
well
done and putting Liberia on the map when it comes to, you know, writing. It's been a while since I saw, you know, such a good writing. Since the day of Professor Wetton Sangarolo, and I must commend him for that. But I got few concerns and a comment.
One has to do
with what is Mr. Zuni doing in taking this book to the Liberian people. I never knew that he had a book in the making until when I saw your posting about him. Yesterday, I tried to research and see what the book is about. You know, I went into it and I saw the review and, you know, I knew that this book is a good one and I must have a copy of it. But then, you know, until he came on your show, I'm not sure if I was going to know if, you know, there's a librarian out there with this, you know, this kind of book. So I was just trying to see what is he doing to bring this book to the people, you know, to the general population, not only Liberia, and how is he taking this book back to Liberia so that it can be distributed in our school system, because it got wealth of knowledge and so much story to relate to everybody, you know, that came out of this country. And then another thing is, he speaks in a chapter about police banging on the door, you know. I just want to know, you know, how he relates this identical part to today policing, you know, police and the people. The police went and he was in the room and they went and they start banking on. How can he relate this, you know, to today's scenarios as it relates to police brutality? Thank you so much, Mr. Zuni, and thank you, Fanta, for taking my call.
You are welcome. Joseph, thank you very much for calling. Mr. Sezone, you want to speak on that and answer his questions?
Yes, yes. Joseph, thank you for calling. The first thing is, Joseph, to be very honest, you know, when God gives you something to do, you have to express it. And the honest truth is that the reason why I have not formally launched the book is I do not have the wherewithal. I do not have the financial means to organize it, to go and campaign and go out there to sell the book. The book is actually on Amazon.com. It's also on BarnesandNoble.com. And you can also go to the author house, the publisher, because this book was self-published. I wrote the book, and I wasn't fortunate to get the publisher to do it for me. So I'm pushing the book myself, and thanks to people like Fanta, who allowed us and giving us a platform to talk about our book. But it's in the works. I'm trying to find resources to go and launch the book, because it's been over a year now, and the book hasn't been formally launched. So that's that. But I tell you, when we're ready, we will go to our good friends, like people like Fanta, to help us and give us the means to launch the book. Secondly, you talk about when you talk about police brutality, that's in chapter 6 of the book. And chapter 6 of the book is actually, the story there is actually about my life, you know, it's when I was young. I had a domestic violence problem with my then girlfriend, and she came by my house, and we raised our voices. The neighbor called the police, and somebody had to be arrested. So we went to court, but it wasn't any big altercation. So I left, she and I left and went for vacation, but then we missed the court date. So I was trying to tell that story. So if you read the entire story, you can read that. So unfortunately, the police story there, it doesn't have anything to do with what's happening in our world today concerning the police brutality. I'm sorry to say that. But thank you, Joseph. I really appreciate the call. And when we are ready to launch the book, we will go to our friends, people like Fanta, to help us, and we will inform the general public. But we don't have the means, the financial means to launch the book. That is why it hasn't gone to the general public. But there are a few copies in Liberia. We send at least 20 copies in Liberia to friends who have it, but it is not yet disseminated to the general public. So I'm sorry about that. But when the time is right, we're going to do that.
Okay, thank you for answering Joseph's questions, and I hope he's listening to your answers. Okay, see, there was another place in your book, I think in the same chapter 2, you say, you get a phrase, you say, there are lots of things we cannot do and we need not try, but those things that we love, that haunt us, must never be left to fear. What is the meaning of that? What were you trying to say?
So, and I think in that passage, I give an example to a 75-year-old man who loved to play soccer. You know, it is true that he loved to play soccer, but his physiological ability would not allow him to play for Chelsea. So those things, he can do them, right? But, you know, but if you have in your heart, if you have a desire, if you have an intent, a burning desire to do something, you know, that cannot be left to fear. There are a lot of things we cannot do and we need not try. Say, for example, I cannot fly a plane. So why would I go sit in that plane and say I'm going to fly a plane? But if I have a burning desire to fly a plane, I would go to school. I would do the necessary work, you know, that would enable me to become a pilot. So there are a lot of the things that we cannot do. So we need not try. But those things that haunt us, those things that we wake up in the morning and say, you know, I want to be an author. I want to speak to people. I want to write. I want to run a business. And those things that haunt us, that burn us, that we dream about, we cannot leave them to fear. We can't be afraid of failure or afraid of, you know, people talking about us. We can't be afraid. We can't be afraid of what people will say. So those things that haunt us, that we worry about, that we think about, that we dream about, we need to get up and go and do those things. You know, there's a quote by this guy called George Bernard Shaw. He said, those who get on in this world are those who get up and look for the circumstances they want. If they can't find it, they go and make it. You see, so if you have a burning desire, don't leave it to fear. I mean, I've not written a book before. You know, I mean, and English, you know, it's back home we spoke our vernacular. And so when I came to the States, we spoke English, of course. You know, but sometimes you get nervous, you get afraid, and you look over your shoulder and say, what people will say about me. What if I write the book and there are infractions in the book? And what if the book is not received? What will people say about me? Will people laugh at me? So those things are fear. If you take your intent, your desire, your burning desire, and lead them to fear, you'll be crippling yourself and you will never live to be a happy person. And that's happiness. If you can embrace who you are with all your being, with all the fiber in your body, and embrace it and go forth and do it, regardless of the outcome, right? You are living. You're successful. So that's why I remember that. You cannot leave what you want to do to fear because people are talking. Embrace it. Do it. And in the end, see, there's another quote I will leave for you. You say, there was a TED talk I listened to once, and the lady said something about, you know, fake it until you make it. But then she said, fake it until you make it, until you become it. So even if you have an idea to do something, get started. And I'll be the first to tell you. I mean, thanks to Joseph for the accolades he gave me on the book. You know, I'm reading the book. To be very honest, I never had the means for auditing. There was no editing on the book. So there are minor infractions, there are minor grammatical infractions on the book. But that did not deter me from writing. And as a matter of fact, I have just finished a sequel to the book. So I step up and did it again. The book has sold only 500 copies. It's not enough to buy me a car yet. You know, it's not enough to even, to do anything. But, you know, but I have the desire to write. So I've sat down, and while I was trying to launch the book, I had an inspiration, and I wrote the sequel. You know, so when you have a dream, when it's burning, you cannot leave it of fear. You must go forth and do it with all your might.
Okay. So in that same question, I have something, some incident you had in your book where you talk about the swimming and then you talk about bike riding. So in that case of swimming, you accepted humiliation.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case of the bike riding, you gave up and you went back. How do you explain that?
Because, you see, the swimming was something I could not do, you know, and I have not practiced before. And the humiliation was not intense as what I saw from this friend. And what I will do for your audience is I will try and read that passage, and let me see if I can find it. Okay, learning to ride a bicycle was one of those things that exhilarated me. But my ability to ride just could not catch up to my desire. It took many falling downs and enough 25 cents to realize my dream of riding a bicycle. After the third fall, and the owner who was leasing his bike screamed and warned me that the next fall would ban me from riding, I knew learning to ride a bicycle wasn't for me. I was done. I just can't do it, I told myself. My buddy, who himself had been warned, he walked away in shame, frustration, and anger. I was angry with myself for being lazy and incompetent. But there is something, now listen to this, but there is something peculiar about life. It is true that our thoughts, desires, or wishes conspire to awaken our carnal man. The defeat comes when we ignore this basic truth. The next day, resigned and defeated, while walking to the store to get my father a bottle of club beer and a pack of Benson & Hedges cigarette, I saw a kid about my age, height, effortlessly pedaling the exact kind of bicycle I was still on the next day. Olu, olu, I thought I'd run after him. Perhaps the wind flopped in his ears, carrying my voice away from him. He pedaled even faster and left me standing there in total amazement. So the next day, it was a second defeat when I saw a boy about my height and my age effortlessly riding a bike. So, you know, it brought me to this point, you know, where I said, listen, fear cannot be a factor anymore, and I cannot allow humiliation to keep me from my shine. I must attempt it. So, you know, sometimes you see people doing things and inspire you. Once you get inspired, don't second guess yourself. Just go full throttle. Go therefore and do it. Yeah, you may not do it, you know, with all this optimization. You may do it halfway or half-hearted, or you may falter, you may fail, but you stare right back up and do it again. So after the swim episode, I could not let the second defeat cripple me anymore. I had to push myself beyond my fear and do it. So I grabbed the bicycle. If you read the story on the book, if you get the book and read it, you will get the entire story. But I conquered that fear, and before too long, I was pedaling. So sometimes fear will bring us to our potential.
Okay. Before we go for a break, would you like to tell my listening audience where they can find your book?
Yes, the book was published by Author House. It's the publishing company. So go to authorhouse.com, and the title of the book is Finding My Frequency. The book is also on Amazon.com. Just type in Finding My Frequency or Say Zoni, my name. And it's also on BarnesandNoble.com. It is not in the store, but it's on their website, BarnesandNoble.com. And you can also find our Talk Zone. Thank you to my gracious host here who have added a link that can link it to Amazon. So if you go to TalkZone.com on the International View, click onto this program, it will take you to that link, and the link will take you to Amazon.com. So those are the places where you can find the book.
Okay, thank you very much for directing my audience to your book. We're going to take another break. We will be back with more discussion on Finding My Frequency.
Welcome back to the International View on TalkZone.com. Here again, Fanta Chroma.
Welcome back, beautiful listeners. Before the break, we were discussing the book, Finding My Frequency. I went deep into your book, and I can't wait to get back to reading it. Chapter 3, you said, by design, forces outside us wave lots of influences to satisfy their ambition. By desertion, we stop short of our own capacity and quit on our ambition. What are you trying to say?
Yes, yeah, so, you know, it goes back to the theme of the entire book, and it goes back to what I've said from the onset of the conversation here today. Because in our world, you know, when we are born, you know, our parents, our loved ones, and our neighbors, our pastors, and our friends, and our teachers, all these people combine mold us to be who we are today. So once, you know, and the chapter 3 is talking about outside influences, you know, people outside of us, or even the country or the organization that influence us to do things their way. Because, you know, the world has a set way of doing things, and when you deviate, and people say, well, no, you cannot deviate from that. You cannot go from the norm. You have to stay put. Who are you to go outside yourself? Who are you to go against the family rule or to go against what we're doing here? So, you know, so they push you back to the center. They push you back, you know, to the norm and to the religious precepts, to the moral codes that we follow in our word. And to be great, to do anything powerful, you have to go beyond the shore. You know, you have to wade in the water. You got to go deeper. You got to leave your comfort zone and go to where no man has gone before and create. That's what creation is. So when I say the influences that control our life do so either by design, is that the outside influences, you know, or our own desertion. So by design, forces outside us with lots of influences to satisfy their selfish ambition. So that's what I mean by that. By design, our parents, our friends, our churches, you know, and all these people want us to do things in a particular way. If we don't do it that way, you know, then we are out of lockstep with that. And by desertion now, this is the most important part. By desertion now, you know, we stop short of our own capacity. Now, this is our fault because we get scared, we get nervous, we worry about what people will say about us, and we don't embrace our own idea. We don't embrace our inner truth. We don't embrace the light that is within us. We allow it to go dim, you know, but that's our fault. That's our own desertion. So, also influence can come either by design or by desertion. By design, we can't help it because the world expects us to be one thing. But by desertion, that's the problem. That's what we fall short when we desert our own ambition. So that's what I meant by that.
Okay. Again, before I go to my next question, I would like you to tell my listeners where we can find your book, where they can find your book.
Yes, the book is on Amazon.com. You go to Amazon.com and type in Finding My Frequency. The book will come up, or you just type my name, Say Zoni, and the book will come up. You can also get the book on BarnesandNoble.com. So that's the website. It's not in stores. So do not go to your local Barnes & Noble looking for the book. I have not reached the point where the book can be placed on shelf yet in the store. So go to BarnesandNoble.com. You can get the book from there. You can also get the book from the publisher's website, Author House. AuthorHouse.com is the publisher of the book. And also, you can go to Talk Zone. Our host has been gracious today to put a link of today's topic and a picture of the book. So if you click on that link from TalkZone.com, the International View, it will take you directly to Amazon. So those are the avenues you can go to get the book.
Okay, thank you very much. So my next question, what is the meaning of chapter 10 title? Because it's not in English.
Oh, yeah. So chapter 10 title, all my books, as a matter of fact, even the book, the manuscript I just completed, all my books, the last chapter we go to, I usually take a word from my native language and use that word. But the word is unwake. And what unwake means, I will do it. That's the literal that's the translation. And on top of the chapter, I put a quote there from Benjamin Disraeli, and it says this. It says that nothing can withstand the power of the human will if it is willing to stick its very existence to the extent of its purpose. So when you have a desire, when you have your will, nothing will stop you from doing that. So chapter 10 is about that. And it also goes into where I wrote my eulogy. If you get the book, you'll read my eulogy, what I want to do. See, that's how you know a man is ready for his life and to do his work. So when I die, everything I once said about me, I've already written it. So that's my work. I know exactly what I want all of life and what I'm pursuing all of life. So now I cannot deviate. So with that, you tell yourself, you say, you know, with everything in me, I cannot fall back. You know, unwake, I will do it. And I also told a story about, yes, go ahead.
What dollar is that?
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Well, like you all know, like the host said, I'm from Liberia, Nimba County. Liberia has 15 different, 15 tribes, and it's from one of the tribes called Mano. And Mano is from one of the populous counties in Liberia called Nimba County. And it's a word meaning that I will do it. Unwake. That's not all the evidence. That's not all the evidence against me. All the hardship, despite the difficulties, I will do what I've set my mind to.
Okay. Thank you for giving the meaning of that title. Do you have any book coming up in the nearest future?
Yes, yes. Like I said, last year, I took the time, January of last year, when the book came out, and I knew that I never had the means to get on the road to sell the book, I started writing. And this is what I said from the very beginning. Once you have desire to do something, you cannot wait for people to say you're great. You cannot wait for notoriety. You cannot wait for money. You just have to write. If I told myself I'm going to become an author, my job is to write. So I sat down and, you know, I never had a job. I never had means to go and promote the book, but I had time to write. So I wrote the sequel to the book. I'm done with the manuscript. I have to sell this book to find the money to print the other book. But yes, it's called Sitting at the Verge, Meditations Before Manifestation. That's the title of the new book. But it's still in the manuscript form. It's not published yet.
Okay. We will go to the line. We have a caller. Victor, are you there?
Yes, Fanta, I'm here.
Okay. Welcome to the International View. Do you have any question or comment for our guest?
Yeah, it may not be just a comment. You know, I just want to congratulate him for the job well done, and I really enjoy everything that he said, and I really want to buy the book. But my comment is, can you please put the book into simple English, our own Liberian English? So that most of our people can be able to buy it and at least, you know, read it and understand what you are saying, because it's very important, you know. If you do that, I think more people will be able to buy it. Just print more of the book and then put it into simple English, our own Liberian English, and send it back home. You think you can do that?
Oh, Victor, I wish I could embrace it. You see, this is a manifestation of what God has told me, because my third book, I'm done with the manuscript. The third book, I have the name in mind already, and I'm going to write it for a Liberian audience. And you're right. That's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to write it for a fifth grade student to read. So thank you. you said it, and I mean, it, the book is not actually going to be a copy directed from this, but all the ideology and the thoughts expounded within this book will be also brought into that book. But you're right, the third book will be done simply for the Liberian audience.
Okay. Thank you, Victor, for calling, and I hope my guest answered your question. Do you have anybody you look up to, like a role model or a mentor?
Yes. You see, to be very frank with you, after the flagellation and after the introspection, I look around and to be very frank, I have few offers. I sometimes with what I've done in my life is very difficult, you know, to talk to people because most people cannot do what I've done. So usually I find solace in offers. And one of my best authors out there is a guy called Coelho Coelho. He wrote a book called The Alchemist, and it's a book I recommend for everyone to read. Although I don't talk to him in person. And I, but that, and also Barack Obama. Barack Obama ascended to the United States presidency really inspired me. You know, he did something in Iowa in January 8, 2008, when he won that caucus. I think I discussed that in the book. You know, and that speech he gave really inspired me. So just the fact that he was able to fight all the adversity and to ascend to the presidency is just something that inspires me to go after my dream. And be who I
want to be. Okay. Sid, thank you very much for coming on our show today. It's like great time we had on this show, and we will look up to your next book, and we pray this won't be a success that people will read and change a lot of things in their life, because a lot of things in people's life relates to this book. So thank you very much for coming on our show today.
Well, thanks for having me. Santa, you do a fantastic job, and I admonish you to continue. And we pray to God that everything you do may be successful. And I want to thank you for everything today. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Okay, thanks everyone for tuning in to our show today. We will be back next week with a brand new edition of the International View Talk Show on TalkZone.com.